Krishna Prabhupada Ki Jai, Bhakti Vai Bhava Ki Jai, Grantaraj Srinan Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai, Jai Nitai Gopremana Ki Jai. So what did we discuss last night? Thank you, Shaker. We're enlightening now.
Did you guys subordinate to our previous use of envy?
Anything else?
When you try to either individual or collectively become public in that same world, they get into realization, realization, get into realization.
Any other points?
One has to be humble to take the benefit of the decision of some.
Anything else?
We have an instinct of not avoiding that service to authority. That is what we saw in King Vinay's case also. He was projecting his own consciousness on this, but that they are engaged in their own spirit. And he got to know that actually he was engaged of them, and that's why he was not subjecting himself to their own spirit. This is very detrimental to our spiritualness because the flow of instruction stops because he didn't understand.
Anything else?
Continuing with Mataji, that if we don't surrender to authority, we disobey our authority, we become sinful.
Any other points?
Ramana can feel someone by these words.
Anything else?
One considers themselves as supreme, as the last door of illusion.
Any final points?
Spiritual life is all about pleasing the party. Spiritual life is all about pleasing the party.
Any other points? Any other points? So we continue with the pastime of King Vena, who was the unrighteous son of King Anga, who appeared in the dynasty of Dhruva Maharaj, one of the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. So he has been killed by the Brahmin, being an unrighteous personality. And tonight we'll hear a continuation of the pastime, where the Brahmanas then decide what to do in the absence of a king, because there needs to be government in society. When there's no government, then the Brahmanas need to act. So tonight we'll hear about the actions of the Brahmanas in regards to King Vena. So tonight we'll go from verses 38 until 46, the end of the chapter. Next week is our final two classes for this year, and we'll finish chapter 15 in those two classes. When the great sages were carrying on their discussion in this way, they saw a dust storm arising from all directions. This storm was caused by the running of thieves and rogues who were engaged in plundering the citizens.
keep the road simply away from political aspects in order to take the opportunity to burden the people in general. Keep the road inactive in their profession, their strong government is always void.
So what points do we get from this purple?
Strong
government
is required to
take
more
time.
Yeah, it is necessary.
People need to be governed. And all the kinds of people exist, so. Government needs to be.
Yeah, because what happens is that if there is no discipline in society, society becomes unruly. And we see that's what's taking place now. There is no strict discipline. Society is acting like, as Prabhupada says, polished animals. Actually worse than animals, because animals are regulated. But these days, practically, people are not regulated. You know? So it is worse than animal life. So if there is not discipline, then people, they become unruly, or they become undisciplined, and then they will do anything. Even less than animal. So, the discipline must be there. That is the duty of the government. That is the duty of the leaders. That is the duty of the, especially within, not just especially within ISKCON, but within ISKCON there must be good leadership. The leaders in ISKCON must be very strong. They must be unafraid to correct improper behavior. If we see that there is improper behavior within ISKCON, it is our duty to be to take the responsibility to correct it. Improper behavior cannot be tolerated because it will be detrimental both to the individuals and then to the society. So therefore, in order to control the improper behavior, the leaders have to be very strong. This is one of the qualifications that Krishna gives for leadership in the Bhagavad Gita. One who is a Kshatriya, he must be Virya. Virya means potent, must be strong, must be powerful. Otherwise, those under him become undisciplined, unruly, and then their lives become chaotic. They cannot progress. So therefore, as leaders in ISKCON, we must become strong. Spiritually strong, and even materially strong. Which means we have to enforce discipline if it is necessary. If we see something is not being done properly, that is not being done properly. Otherwise, all the standards gradually drop over time. And then we lose the pure standards which were originally given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Even over time, since I've joined the temple in the last 20 years, I've seen standards drop. Because over time, then standards are lost, and people forget them or do not enforce them or they're not seen. Then gradually standards come down. And then, over time, another 20 years, another 100 years, and then many of the standards can be lost. So it is our duty as leaders to enforce things, to enforce discipline, to make sure there are standards, they are met and that they are kept. That is the qualification. So the leader must be strong, he must be courageous. He must not be intimidated not enforce the proper standards or proper leadership. Otherwise, that you're not qualified to be a leader. Just like there was one book which was written some years ago, and it was called Lead, Follow, or Get Out of the Way. And basically, that's the standard, right? Either you're the leader, or you're the follower, or get out of the way. Don't be in between. Right? Either take the lead or follow someone who is competent to lead, like that. But do not try to be something in between or something that causes disturbance. Now, the quality of a good leader is that he is a good follower. The quality of Srila Prabhupada's leadership was that he was a perfect disciple. To become a guru, you must first become a disciple. You become qualified to be a guru when you are first qualified as a disciple. You're qualified to be a leader within ISKCON and to take charge of others when you yourself become a good follower. Right? If you will follow the discipline of your superiors, of your spiritual preceptors, then you become qualified to instruct others. No? But if you will not follow, then how can you instruct someone else? How can someone else become inspired, right? If you will not follow yourself?
Therefore, that is your qualification. And you must be a proper follower. You must be prepared to be surrendered and set the proper example.
If you did not set the proper example, how will others follow you? So that is a qualification. So what is the defect in modern society? We did not have proper leaders. And because we did not have proper leaders, then society becomes unruly. People who will not speak up and discipline when necessary. Okay. So, any points so far?
In a democratic world, it's very difficult to have proper leadership because most of the places we find minority governments, and the leaders, they are dependent on their members, the key members. Actually, leaders are dependent on the party members, so it's almost difficult to have a strong leadership.
Any other points?
Like in the Middle East, some people that they play the Quran all the five times, the whole street, before like started 4:20 and everything. So everybody has to do that, so that's sort of a rule. So something similar to that, that it can be enforced that they have to go to the temple or something. That would be a good, I think there's democracy, it's difficult, but something to that effect that can be enforced. Some religious people would be there.
But Prabhupada said the factory workers should have kirtan during their lunch break.
What is the concept of a leader within Islam? We understand temple president, GBC, Jewish president, communities, presidential of the temple. What is the leadership structure?
Leader means that, like a broad definition of a leader, which I heard many years ago, is that he knows where he's going and people are following him. If no one's following you, you're not a leader because there's no one there. So, what are you leading? And if you don't know where you're going, then you're not a leader. It might be people following you, but if you have no idea where you're going, you're not the leader. You're lost. Like that. So broadly speaking, that anyone, if someone is following us, if we have a bhakti vriksha group, so there's different types of leadership. There's this leadership of the society, which means the management, which means the temple presidents, the GBC, those things. But then there is spiritual leadership, which means the gurus, the bhakti vriksha, the mentors, the bhakti vriksha leaders, all these things like that. So there's, in so many capacities, we are leaders, either spiritually or materially or within the organization. Is that what you're... Any other points?
I think rebelling is the natural quality of a human being. That's why we have fallen from a spiritual world. They also have rebelled and therefore we have come down here. And therefore that instinct is there in every human being. Unless it is mental or discipline right from childhood. We say that mokkai vangande mane vangande. Unless the tree is bent when it is young, later on it will never bend because it becomes very strong. And we find that even in our children, although they are part of in our association, but after they grow up a particular age, there's a tendency to rebel in the sense that not complying with the instructions.
Any other points? Okay. Upon seeing the dust storm, the saintly persons could understand that there was a great deal, that there were a great deal of irregularities due to the death of King Vena. Without government, the state was devoid of law and order. and consequently, there was a great uprising of murderous thieves and rogues who were plundering the riches of the people in general. Although the great sages could subdue the disturbance by their powers, just as they could kill the king, they considered it improper on their part to do so. Thus they did not attempt to stop the disturbance.
Saintly persons and great sages did King Rama out of emergency, but they did not choose to take part in the government in order to subdue the uprising of thieves and rogues which took place after the death of King Rama. It is not the duty of Brahmanas and saintly persons to kill, although they may sometimes do so in the case of an emergency. They could kill all the thieves and rogues for the province of their mantra, but they thought it the duty of Satya kings to do so. Thus they reluctantly did not take part in the killing of the kings.
So what are the points?
Great sages have that power in them. They could do what they wanted, but they were also, they have humility enough to do it as well.
I don't know if humility is the right.
Yeah, humility or the registration, I think.
Yeah, because they're equipoised. Prabhupada said they have equanimity, so they don't have, they don't like to get involved in these kind of things.
So. The very basis of the one national system is the spirit of the four nations, among the four visible varnas. And when all the four varnas completely understand the boundary of their envy of an authority responsible. And by the cooperative endeavor, the peace and prosperity will be given on this side. So, when the same persons have acted within an emergency situation, although it's not possible to do so, but now they are saying that this is not a serious enough situation, the Brahmanas should not break their boundary. So, like Kshatriya has just stayed over, and we should not have the situation now.
To me, I find it slightly unpalatable though, because the Brahmanas knew that if they are going to kill the king through their mantra, obviously the next situation is going to be that the ropes and dicks are going to become upper hand. So therefore, they should have anticipated things to happen and equally put forth some sort of a check in place to check that things not happen. We find a similar situation in the present environment where couple of Western countries have sent their forces into Iraq. They have removed the existing person without anticipating what is going to be the consequences. As a result, what a person has killed, we do not know, but these guys have killed much more than those members.
Any other points? It seems that the ministers were there because the ministers elected the king, as Prabhupada explained earlier, and the elders in the family. So they killed the monarch, the king, but it was not that there was no one left to install someone else. But for some reason, maybe they didn't have someone strong enough or something like that. So for some reason, law and order was lost in the kingdom. Doesn't explain exactly what took place.
Sometimes they did it as an emergency, but maybe they didn't have the right things that have to be done.
Yeah, there may not have been someone powerful enough to replace Vena at the time. So.
There are two margas, privilege and humility. So doing things which are favorable and preventing things which are unfavorable. Looks like the Brahmanas were more concentrating on the privilege, and because the privilege marga was being stopped by the king, so therefore they killed him. But the Brahmanas do not enter the administration of Nivriti, because that is the job of the Kshatriya. That's how I understood.
Yeah, it doesn't explain exactly what takes place, but there's some discrepancy in the government. Okay. So, the Brahman is, the nature of Brahman is to be detached. Now, Brahmanas do not like to become involved in worldly activities. And if you say it more broadly, devotees do not like to become involved in worldly activities. So that is the nature of Brahminical life. A Brahmana is detached. So he doesn't like politics and he doesn't like killing. Now, this is the duty of those who are more involved in the world. So, Srila Prabhupada said that in ISKCON we need to create a society of Brahmanas. Those who are not involved in the material world, because one of the qualities, or two of the qualities of the Brahmana, is jnana and vairagya. A Brahmana must be qualified with these two qualities. He must be learned and he must be detached. Because when he is learned and when he is detached, then he has potency in his words. If he is politically involved, then how will his words breed detachment within us? Just like we see sometimes someone preaches, someone gives a class or they preach, but then off the Vyasa-san they speak gossip. So where is the potency? Everything's, all the talk is about politics and this one did that and this one did that and this one did that, like that. So then where's the potency? Someone who is Brahminical is not interested in the mundane world, is not interested in the material goings on in this world. So he must have detachment. When one is detached, the one has vairagya, then one becomes potent. When one has jnana, or knowledge, when he is learned, then he becomes potent. That is the qualities of the Brahma. He must be learned, he must be detached. Then there is potency. So the Brahmanas do not like to get involved in these material affairs. So just like the Brahmanas, they removed King Vena, but they don't like to get involved with running the government. They did not directly involve themselves in running the government like that. They don't step into those kind of positions. Just like Prabhupada said, we don't want to run the government, we will advise the government. That is his composition. We are Brahminical. So therefore we give advice. We tell everyone, you do like this, you do like this, you structure it like this, you organize it like that, you behave like this. This is the correct culture. So we give all these instructions, but we don't want to directly involve ourselves in all the worldly things. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, management gives me a headache. That was Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, management gives me a headache. But Prabhupada said that his books, writing his Bhaktivedanta Purports, that was his spiritual ecstasies. So Brahminical work is very blissful for those who are detached. They like to be involved in the spiritual energy. But for one who is spiritually advanced, he doesn't like to become materially involved too much. That is the position of a sannyasi. We have to remember this, because sometimes many of our gurus are sannyasis. But we should not involve the sannyasis in our, for example, in our, the problems in our brihaspa life. Just like my Guru Maharaj, he was living in Cambridge at one point in England, and his servants were a grihastha couple, husband and wife, and they were quite new devotees. And then maybe a few times then the grihastha, the man, he would say to my Guru Maharaj, because they were together a lot, he would say, my wife is like this, or wife like that. And my Guru Maharaj said, I don't want to hear about your grihastha affairs. I don't want to hear about your mundane attachments and your problems and your, what is in your material life. Right? That is going to pollute my consciousness. I'm a sannyasi. I'm devoid of these things. I'm detached from these things. So we should remember this point. Then in our counseling system, in our mentorship system, then generally we go for advice to grihasthas, senior grihasthas generally. Spiritual advice we can get from the sannyasis, but we don't involve them in material affairs, because they are detached and that is their position. So we should not involve them in our materialistic affairs, the details of the material. But you can give them basic things to solve, or basic issues to get advice on, but not details. That should be for the grihasthas, like that. So we need all sorts of authorities in order to guide us in our spiritual life. As my spiritual master said when he initiated me, he said, do not depend just on me. He said, it will take many people to take you back to Godhead. So form relationships with many devotees. Great help to them sannyasis of life. And then your spiritual life will be safe. The more people looking after you, the safer you are in your spiritual life. Okay, so. Any points?
If the sannyasi guru was a grihastha before, still one should not approach
it? It means with details, like I said, with details. Just like when I first got engaged to my wife, then, you know, we had some problems. And then I went to my Guru Maharaj and I began to disclose things to him. And then he said to me, he said, actually, this is not my business. He said, actually, you should approach Anuruddha and Chintaruddha Maharaj. He said, it's actually their domain. You go and speak to Grihasthas about these things. He gave general advice, but he didn't want to get into the details and so forth.
I have one of the Prabhupada lectures where Prabhupada met a former Indian Prime Minister, Indira Gandhi, and when they had a conversation, Prabhupada said, asked her that all the ministers in your cabinet has to be Brahmin initiated. So here Prabhupada is suggesting Brahmins have to rule the government. So, is it because of the situation or...?
No, problem. The minister is the advisor to the Kshatriya. Just like King Yudhishthira, then he would have ministers, brahmanas, who he would sit with regularly, and then they would advise him, and they would discuss. But they did not get involved with the implementation of the decisions. That's the Kshatriya's business, to manage things and to implement things and to make sure things are running. But the brahmanas give advice, so it means the ministers, they give advice to the... Okay. Any other points?
In history, we have only one Chanakya Pandita, but after that we don't have any more Chanakya Panditas to really mentor or govern or advise Kshatriyas. Having the ability of the true spirit of the Chanakya to advise and guide Kshatriyas, I think it's a rare phenomenon. It's not that easy.
It is now, because as Prabhupada says, there's not many Brahmanas and Kshatriyas left. Mainly it's Sudras and Sambhashas. The great sages began to think that although a brahmana is peaceful and impartial because he is equal to everyone, it is still not his duty to neglect poor humans. By such neglect, the brahmana's spiritual power diminishes, just as water kept in a cracked pot leaks out. I see Roger, could you continue the first paragraph?
Brahmanas, the topmost section of human society, are mostly devotees. They are generally unaware of the happenings within the material world because they are always busy in their activities for spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, when there is a calamity in human society, they cannot remain impartial. If they do not do something to relieve the distressed condition of human society, it is said that due to such neglect, their spiritual knowledge diminishes. Almost all the sages told the Himalayas for their personal benefit. But Prahlad Maharaj said that he did not want liberation alone. He decided to wait until he was able to deliver all the fallen souls in the world.
So what points do we have here?
Reaching enhances our own devotion.
What is that?
Reaching enhances our own devotion.
The Brahmanas have empathy for people?
A devotee always considers for the welfare of the other people rather than his own.
The Brahmanas get the transcendental knowledge only for the purpose of preaching. They say over here whether you preach or not, if you do not use the knowledge for the benefit of the masses, then that knowledge would just diminish. It means the very purpose why the knowledge is given to you in the first place is to preach.
In second chapter it is mentioned, the word Kripana is mentioned, we are reading explained by Bhagavad Gita. Kripana is miser, miserly person, though he has wealth, but he doesn't distribute it properly, utilize it properly, then he loses all his wealth. And there is the wealth of a Brahmana is knowledge. He must use that knowledge to and spread it, otherwise he cannot keep it like a miser. And our mood, this also reflects on the mood of this Krishna. You are Goshti Anandi. You are not Bhajan Anandi. Our whole business is our family business. We are preaching Krishna. And that's why our movement is so potent against so many other societies.
So generally, the devotees are aloof from material society. But when they see people are in need, then it is their duty to assist. Just like I remember a few years ago in, was it Japan or Taiwan? It was one of those places. But there was a heavy earthquake or like cyclone like that. So one devotee, he was there. Maybe there's a few devotees there, but. Then they began prasadam distribution. So there's the duty of the brahmanas. Generally, brahmanas are aloof. They do not become involved in the material world. But when they see there is a necessity, then they become involved. Just like when there is some sort of calamity in the world or something, then we must become involved. Just like when they had this tsunami a few years ago, then immediately we responded with prasadam distribution. And the orphanage in Sri Lanka, like that. And whenever there is some sort of problem, then it is our duty to assist. But whenever we distribute, for example, when there's floods in Bangladesh or when there's floods in Bengal around Mayapur, then Jayaprakash Swami would go out on the boat for days and days and days on end, just taking khichdi out to everyone, everyone who was stuck in the floods. He would go back, fill up the boat with khichdi, and he would go out, right, and distribute the khichdi, just going out for days, like that. So, the devotees assist, but we all always assist by giving people Krishna consciousness. In other words, we give prasad. Now, we're not the Salvation Army, or the Red Cross, but we give bhoga, and increase people's entanglement in the material world. No, our duty is to deliver everyone from the material world. So even when we see there is some calamity in the world, just like we had the bushfires recently, and Bhakti Prabhu organized for prasadam distribution. So we're concerned about these things. That we want to help people in this world. But the help must be spiritual help. We must not be sentimental. Devotees should not become a mundane, ISKCON is not a mundane charitable institution. It's not that we just give charity like that. No, we give Krishna. We give Krishna consciousness. We give purified food stuff. We give prasadam and spiritual knowledge. So when we see people are in need, then we do something about it. Yeah. So, what is the actual what is the actual necessity of humanity? Humanity's necessity is to receive spiritual knowledge, because the world is very dark at this point in time and people do not have knowledge, so therefore it is our duty in ISKCON to give spiritual knowledge to the masses. Otherwise people become they remain in ignorance. So our duty, our primary duty, is to enlighten people with spiritual knowledge. So therefore Prabhupada has instructed us within ISKCON that in order to assist humanity in good times and bad times, what is our program? It is to distribute books, to distribute prasadam, and to distribute the holy name. That is our program. When things are going so-called good in the material world, that is our occupation, that is our duty. We distribute prasadam, we distribute books, we distribute the holy name. And when things go bad, what do? Same program. Distribute books, distribute prasadam, to serve the holy name, because this is the panacea, this is the cure, yeah, for humanity's problems. There is not another cure. No other institution can provide the actual cure for the problems in the world. The problem in the world is actual spiritual
deficiency.
Yeah, like a spiritual deficiency. There is not a spiritual culture in this world. So that is our duty, to give a spiritual culture. Now Prabhupada points out that if you see that this necessity is there and you do not respond by giving Krishna consciousness to others, then your Krishna consciousness begins to dry up. It is your duty. As Prabhupada said, it is our family business. We must preach. You must give Krishna consciousness to others. It's not good enough to just practice it by yourself. Prabhupada said most of the sages go to the Himalayas to practice by themselves and to save themselves. But Prahlad Maharaj said to Nisringadev that I do not want to go. I do not want to save myself when all the fools and rascals are suffering. I want to save all the fools and rascals also. So I will not go until they are also saved. So that is the mood of the devotee. And when Vasudev Datta said this to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vasudev Datta said that I want that everyone else in the universe go back to Godhead. I will take all their suffering. Let them all go back to the spiritual world. And then Lord Chaitanya said, just by your desire, they have all gone back. You do not have to suffer like that. And he said, actually, you are Prahlad Maharaj. And Bhaktivedanta Swami had the same mood of devotion, Krishna. That let everyone else in this kind and in the world, but especially in this kind, let all that suffering come unto me. I will take that suffering and let the devotees have freedom to practice their spiritual life. So this is the mood of the devotees. The mood of the devotee is that we must do something about the ignorance of humanity. It is your duty. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Yari deka tari kaha Krishna upadesh amara agyaya guru hana tara edesh. On my order, whoever you meet, wherever you go, you must give them Krishna consciousness. It is your duty to give Krishna consciousness to the world. Wherever you go, wherever you meet, you must give them Krishna. That is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. On my order, you become a guru and you deliver your land. That is the mood of the Vaishnavas. It is the Goshtanandi line of the Srila Prabhupada, of Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur, of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the mood of the Vaishnavas. Any points? Yeah, so you see in our line, then Gaukashodas Babaji Maharaj and Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj were like that. They were bhajananandi. But their bhajan purified the entire universe. And their bhajan was so powerful that it inspired Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur to go out and preach. And they were empowered by their gurus to go out and preach and save humanity. So much so that Srila Prabhupada said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so powerful that he could have delivered the whole universe, but he left us some service to do.
The Manasika chanting, the Nupamsha chanting, which is very silent with chanting, they are very powerful maras. And they are more powerful than chanting loudly. Prahlad Maharaj goes against that. You must chant the one in loudly. If you chant him, you are just delivering all the souls which are basically around you. The Guru would say that the loud chanting is 1,000 times better than a silent chanting. Just a matter of lips.
At one point we said that we should go out and
like the problems of the society solved with Krishna consciousness. But at the other point you say that this world is dukkhali. So then we become hopeless of nothing. We can't change the world. So how do you fit in?
Because we say that Krishna consciousness is working every day. It's like you read about Indrajumna Swami's pastimes on a daily basis, right? And you see that he's changing a part of the world, and you see so many examples around the world of devotees who are changing. You see, even when we preach, we see on a daily basis that people change. So if you go out and preach, you'll see the result, and then you become inspired. We know we won't change the world overnight, but gradually things are improving. Things are already improving.
Recently there were Indian students attacked by Australians or whatever it's called, but whatever, some living entity were getting hurt by other living entity. So we sit back and just look, these might be their karma. So how do we justify the philosophy with problems of society?
What's the point?
The point is, sometimes we think that it is because of their karmas people are suffering.
Yeah, ultimately it is. Ultimately, it's because of ignorance. Okay. Why would you attack someone that you don't even know? Right? That's what a snake does. A snake doesn't even know you. You didn't even do anything. It becomes a macho. So you don't even know the person, you've never met the person, they never did anything to you, but then you attack them. So then what is your consciousness? So you will be punished. There's someone called Yamaraj who waits for all these people and he punishes them. Is that okay? You don't have to worry, Yamaraj will take care. Yamaraj is also an Indian.
Now,
answering this question, so for me, I want to add what I know. The morning that this incident happened, then some of the brahmacharis in our temple received SMS messages from people saying that you people should come for the rally in Melbourne City. The same morning, the day before the incident happened, a student was in the hospital. The problem there was that the students who assembled there, they took the law into their own hands, and some of them apparently, allegedly, threw stones at and they damaged public property. Now the problem is, if devotees go and directly mingle with these personalities, then we, as ambassadors of Srila Prabhupada, the image of ISKCON stands to get affected, which is much more damaging. To help one or two Indian students cause, you damage the larger cause, strategic cause of humanity. But at the same time, what we did was, when the government organized a rally, then we did go, devotees did go and participate for the cause of India. So in an organized rally, definitely ISKCON participated. But in an unorganized rally, where anger and emotions were at that time paramount, at that time it's very risky for devotees to go, because we carry the image of the institution.
Anything else?
So what exactly preaching means? Preaching means to give lectures, give classes, or there are other ways also for preaching. So what exactly is the definition for preaching?
It means to give someone the holy name, to give someone spiritual knowledge, or one of Prabhupada's books, or to give them prasadam, that's preaching. Give them a favorable impression of the Hare Krishna movement, that's preaching. Just like Saraswati, she was only a 3-year-old girl. You see on the Prabhupada videos, you know, she was only a 3-year-old girl. She traveled to India with Prabhupada when he took their devotees to India. And then she would go up to people all the time and say, "Do you know who Krishna is?" And they'd say, "Who?" And she'd say, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead." So Prabhupada said she was preaching according to her realization. So whatever you know, then you teach others about that. Get a point.
This world is good and it's not enough, this world of suffering. But it can make difference for few souls, you know, you can save them from this continuous suffering.
For example, there was a story when there were starfish on the beach, and someone was, and there were a lot of them, thousands of them, and two were walking, and one was throwing one by one, and the other told him, what will make the difference if you just throw away one out of the thousand? And he said, it will make difference with that one in the water.
Okay, so read the second paragraph.
In their elevated condition, the Brahmanas are called Vaishnavas. There are two types of Brahmanas, one is Brahmana Pandita and Brahmana Vaishnava. A qualified Brahmana is naturally very learned, but when his learning is advanced in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes a Brahmana Vaishnava. Unless one becomes a Vaishnava, one's perfection of Brahminical culture is incomplete.
What points do you get in this little paragraph?
When you study that verse, Neha Yasi Karma Dharma and Madhirada Yasi Karma, Tirtha Pata Seva, Jivana Sudha Sarusa. If the religious activities of a person, karma and whatever the activities of a person or for society doesn't need him to renunciation, and if that renunciation doesn't lead to love of Supreme Personality of Godhead, then such a person is to be considered dead even when he is. So here Prabhupada is emphasizing that it's not enough to be a Brahman Pandit and just have knowledge, but from that knowledge, devotion should arise for Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, as good as a person is dead.
Anything else?
In Bhagavad Gita he says, Vedasya Sarve Ahameva Vedya. So all the Vedas he used to be known. Like a Brahmana is a Pandit, I mean, if he studies the Vedas, and if he doesn't know what actually the Vedas is conveying, then he is not a Brahmana actually.
So that's the culmination of all spiritual knowledge, is to realize Bhagavan. And Bhagavan realization, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Then Brahmiti, Paramatmiti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjiti. The Absolute Truth has three phases. But to understand the Absolute Truth as Bhagavan and to realizing that God is a personality, not just the personality, but the original personality of Godhead is Lord Sri Krishna. That is the topmost Brahmanical platform. That surpasses any Brahmana. Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur was once asked to come to a debate about the superiority of either the Brahmanas or the Vaishnavas. So he went, and many great persons spoke, many very learned persons spoke. And then finally, Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur came and spoke. And in the beginning, he glorified the Brahmanas. He said, the Brahmanas are very exalted. And he glorified all the qualities of the Brahmanas, according to the Vedas, many, many, many shlokas and many verses. However, the perfection of Brahminical life or Brahminical culture is to become a Vaishnava, right? To become a devotee of Krishna. Not that you are simply materially detached, you are learned, but if you have no bhakti or devotion to Krishna, what is the point of your detachment? What is the point of your learning? Your learning is incomplete because you've not understood Krishna. When you understand Krishna, that is the perfection of your learning. You may be detached, but if you do not understand Krishna, you will simply become attached again in the future. You can only become permanently detached from this material world when you become attached to Krishna. Otherwise, it's not possible. So that is the perfection of Brahminical life. Because a Brahmana means one who has realized a Brahman. Brahman means spirit. Who is the Parabrahman? That is Krishna. So that is the perfection of Brahminical life. To understand that spirit is personal. To understand the personality of God. If you do not understand the personality of God, then your learning is not complete. So, read the next paragraph. Isha, can you read the next?
The thinking person considered very wisely that although King Vena was very sinful, he was born in a family descending from Dhruva Maharaj. Therefore, the sin in the family must be protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Keshava. as such, they just wanted to take some steps to relieve the situation. For one of the things, everything was being disturbed and turned topsy-turvy.
So what are the points in this final paragraph?
Lord Narasimhadev has said that 20 generations above and 20 generations subsequently are delivered. How is that in a family like Dhruva Maharaj? Up to 20 generations there should be quite powerful kings, but we have a king like you now. And how is he going to be delivered according to the promise of Lord Narasimhadev to Prahlad Maharaj?
Good fortune. Krishna delivered Putana. The Lord's mercy. After that, then he delivers.
The powerful dynasty must continue for the welfare of the mankind. Checking on the mankind. And we normally understand that when the family is a pure devotee, certain generations before and after they deliver. So, Vena is descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. So, what was his fate? Has he gone back to God?
Yeah, he's being delivered. Well, as for what that delivery means, and how far you go, and how great that liberation is, that's up to Krishna. But the point is that everyone is benefited when someone's a devotee in the family. So Prabhupada is explaining that the Kshatriya rulers, they were great Rajashis. So a Rajashi is one who uses his independence for the pleasure of Krishna. He protects his citizens like children. That is the move between the king and the citizens. The actual king, when he's a saintly personality, then his mood is one of vatsalya, or one that the citizens are my children, and he feels that they are dependent upon him, and he has actual affections for the citizens, and the citizens feel genuine affection towards him. Just like you read in the Mahabharata, that when Pandu Maharaj, who was the great father of the Pandavas, then when he went out and conquered the land, after there had not been a Kuru ruler for some time, he went out and he conquered the land, and then when he came back, the entire city came out to greet him with genuine love and affection for the king. That's how much in the previous times the kings were loved. That's how much affection there was there between the king and the citizens, because the king protected the citizens, and the citizens, they serve the king, they worship the king. Okay, so when the king is actually selfless, and he's actually a pure devotee, and he actually rules the citizens on behalf of Krishna for the benefit of the citizens, and his main desire is to lead them towards Krishna consciousness, then Krishna fully protects that king, and he fully protects that family. Like that, everyone is protected by Krishna, because when Krishna sees that we are taking responsibility and that we are assisting others, then he will look after that person. Just like you see His Holiness Jayaprataka Swami, then whenever he goes into difficulty, because he is, so many people are fully dependent upon him, and because he is nourishing the spiritual lives of so many, that when he goes into difficulty, then Krishna protects him. Because on several occasions we've seen that he's been put into a situation which is materially impossible, and then he begins to recover. So why is Krishna allowing that to take place? Because Krishna will protect. So for the devotees, there is no fear. We have no fear, because we understand Krishna will protect us. If we give our lives fully to Krishna as His servants, to assist others in becoming Krishna conscious, then Krishna protects us. Otherwise, it's not possible. Okay. So the brahmanas, they always desire peace within society. We hear in the Vedic times, we see in the Vedic mantras, at the end of the yajnas, then the Brahman as they chant Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. They desire going to be peaceful, because that's the natural situation in the world. When people are following the laws of God, the laws of Krishna, what is the result? Everyone is peaceful. What happens when you don't follow the laws of God? Right? No, it is not peaceful. No? Just like you go to places where people are particularly sinful, and the place is very unpeaceful. No? Just like places like Bangkok. I don't know if you've ever been to Bangkok. It's a very sinful city. It's extremely disturbed. The vibration there is extremely disturbed. Why is that? Because people are sinful. Wherever people are sinful, everyone becomes disturbed. When people follow the laws of God, everything becomes shanti, peaceful. The Brahmins, they want everyone to be like that. That is their duty, to teach that, and if need be, to make adjustments so that things will remain like that.
I think that is this point that whether how come Vena was taken care of by the Lord, being a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj. We learnt in the earlier section that if somebody is killed by a Brahmana or a devotee, then that person gets liberation. We learned in the session. So in that sense, was Vena's liberation assured? Because he was actually killed by the Brahmana, by Vaishnava Brahmana.
Yeah, that means that there's benefit to him. Okay. Yeah, there's benefit.
But the way Vena spent his life, and he could have found the sinful devils in his Brahman, is this gone back to God? That he's strongly powerful?
It may not be immediately, but there's benefit. We don't have to worry so much about. Those we have to understand is if Krishna kills you, or the devotees kill you, then you are fortunate. How far you go, that's up to Krishna. Okay. Okay.
You mentioned the purport that the king should look after the general people, citizens, like a father or like a boyfriend. So I'm just coming back to the same. I'm sorry. You have no care. Can you tell me who was the devotee who went in the alley?
Yes. Can you tell me?
Because I was there and I couldn't see anyone.
No, I'm talking from the religious temple or in the place. Not on that day. They said on that day nobody, no devotee was there.
Okay, I went there and I didn't see any devotee.
Yeah, but you know, on that day we didn't participate. Because it was on our own.
See, Indian community is all Brahman up there, so they don't engage in social That's true, Prabhu. By nature, Indian community is docile. That's the reason why the world ruled India for such a long time.
That's the one that I want to learn.
Okay. The sages decided that the descendants of the family of the saintly King Anga could not be stopped. For in this family, the semen was very powerful, and the children were prone to become devotees of the Lord.
The glory of the succession should constitute
among the
sons of Brahmana, and the pious seminal succession in the 12-born family of the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas especially, as well as in the family of Vaishyas also, must be kept very pure by the observation of the purificatory processes, beginning with Garbhadham Samskara, which is observed before giving birth to a child. Unless this purificatory process is strictly observed, especially by the Brahmanas, the family descendants become impure, and gradually sinful activities become visible in the family. Maharaj Anga was very pure because of the purification of Samina in the family of Maharaj Dhruva. However, the Samina became contaminated in association with his wife Sunita, who happened to be the daughter of death personified. Because of this polluted Samina, King Vena was produced. This was a catastrophe in the family of Dhruva Maharaj,
all the faithful persons and sages considered this point and they decided to take action in this manner as described in the following verses.
Any points?
The qualification of verses is very, very important and by qualified Brahmana.
Isn't it strange that the Brahmanas were further differentiating that marriage shouldn't consider yet? Because if it seems they get just married just for that, I think the role should really check.
Yeah, I don't know. Certain things are hard to understand. What took place?
Even the unions of very male families with divorces, you know, theoretically purposes are not done. So it cannot be an assumption that, you know, the son of a devotee will be a devotee or the devotee doesn't follow all the theoretically purposes which are required slowly. The effect will be lost.
So, this is how the seminal succession was kept pure. Because the Kshatriyas, they gave birth to very exalted personalities generation after generation after generation after generation. And the Brahmanas gave birth to very exalted personalities generation after generation after generation. So how was the seminal line kept pure? It was kept pure because of samskara. Samskara means you have to perform purificatory rites. Right? You have to purify your consciousness. And when the consciousness is kept pure, then you can produce good progeny. But if the consciousness is not kept pure, then you do not produce good progeny. So this requires discipline. We must discipline ourselves to keep our consciousness pure. Because when we discipline ourselves, our consciousness remains pure, then we have auspicious results in our life. But our lives will not produce auspicious results if we do not keep our consciousness pure. So, just like on Sunday, then Kartik begins. Right, the month of Kartik, the most holy of all months. Far more holy than any month of the year. So everyone should take vratas. Everyone should take vows for the entire month in order to purify the consciousness. Because that will lead us upwards. And that will purify the consciousness and allow us to come closer to Krishna. To Radha and Krishna. So it is necessary that we take these vratas during this Kartik mass. Now you can chant one extra round a day, or eight extra rounds a day, or 32 rounds. You can do so many different vratas like that. So many different things that you can do in order to. So you need to think. And this purifies the consciousness. This is how the great Kshatriyas, the great Brahmanas could produce valuable offspring generation after generation after generation, because they kept the consciousness pure by their samskaras. So we must perform samskaras, we must perform tapasya, we must purify ourselves, we must do bhakti for the pleasure of Krishna, we must increase things, we must purify the consciousness. Kartik is coming, do some austerity for Krishna, increase your bhakti, increase your devotion, purify your consciousness, and then everything becomes auspicious. All the results in your life become it. You want a child? Right? Do some Kartik Vrata. Then have a child. Try to conceive. Right? If you want anything in your life, if you want to achieve something in your life, right? If you want to get closer to Krishna, then take on some austerity. Tapo Divyam. Right? You must do austerity for the pleasure of Krishna. That is how you advance in Krishna consciousness. Any points? After making a decision, the saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force and according to a specific method. As a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born from King Vena's body. The Prabhupada explains in the purport that life only comes from life, it does not come from matter. You cannot go and churn someone's body, find a dead body and begin to churn it. Right, and expect some life to come out. It doesn't work. Right? It only comes when a soul enters into that life form, and then life will come. So it is not by Prabhupada that always challenged. The scientists, they say, well, we can create big airplanes, big Boeing 747s, huge airplanes, so many people fly. Prabhupada said, then make one mosquito. Just wait, one mosquito is far more effective than an airplane. Mosquito doesn't cause any pollution. Right? You never hear about, mosquitoes crashing. Right? You never hear about some mosquito got hijacked. You don't hear about all these problems which are caused. Noise pollution. We're trying to have a serious conversation here.
So how
we
can explain that body, the alive person, came up? How we can explain that?
We explained because that was the Brahminical Tejas. And the Brahmins had that potency previously to do these things. If someone's atheistic or if they don't have prior knowledge, they won't understand these things. Okay. We have faith that these things are possible.
Yes, you know. That's okay, but what you will tell them that the Brahman asked the sages from that method to make a life person?
No, they brought a jiva from some other place and then the jiva entered. Just like when Chitrakeshu's son died, the Narada, then he brought the jiva back. So by the potency of the Brahman, they can do these kind of things.
But the man say, I can do that thing.
You can say anything you want. You can say anything you want, but then do it.
Okay, but okay. If you fix upon, you say life comes from life, and this is the dead body, right? So how do we say life comes from life?
Because that's the point, that we just explained that point. The soul entered. Right? It wasn't dead, this is Prabhupada's point, it wasn't dead matter. You can churn a body, or you can put electric shock into the electric current. Some people say it's just electric current which makes us alive. So they put electric current into it. Nothing happens, right? Still, unless the soul enters. So similarly, they churned and they made this other body. Brahmanas are very powerful. How they did it, that's another thing. But then the soul had to enter for life to come. That's Prabhupada's point. Yes?
When Prabhupada said that the dead body was preserved by drugs and mantras, he's saying that the body was kept alive then?
No, it was dead, but it was preserved.
How can the
soul have to enter into the body? You can preserve, just like we can preserve a body, like by putting balm on it, by putting certain oils on it, chanting the mantra. She preserved the body, but the body was dead for months and years, right? But then when the sages, they churned and they brought another body out, right, by their mysticism, but then they brought a soul into that body, then life came. That's Prabhupada's point. Without a soul, nothing works. Now, that's why Prabhupada said to the scientists, you make a mosquito. It's okay, they can make a mosquito, maybe. They can create all the structure of a mosquito, but then now make it live. No, you cannot do it. Life must come from life. It does not come from matter. You cannot manipulate things. Just like the scientists recently, they made a little robotic fly. It's like a tiny little fly, like a fly, same size as a fly, looks like a fly, but it's a robot. And they said they can fly it around, and they said, they spend all this millions of dollars to make this little fly. And they said, what are you going to use it for? And they said, oh, we can use it to spy on other things, and a crazy waste of time. But they cannot create life. They cannot make that fly live. Like that. It's still just a mechanism. So you'll never do it. So that's why Prabhupada said. And then what was that devotee's name? Can't remember. One of Prabhupada's disciples was arguing with one professor in the newspaper. What was it? One of the 11 gurus? One of the original ones? Can't remember what his name is. So he was arguing back and forth in the newspaper. It was like they're having this weekly argument in one of the newspapers. And he would write an article, and then the editorial, and then the scientist would respond the next week, and he would respond the next week.
Not Ramaswamy.
No, not Ramaswamy. That was one of them. Hamsaduta. Hamsaduta, probably. So he was writing, and then Prabhupada very much liked it because he would send the article to Prabhupada every week. He would write, and then the scientist would write back, and then the scientist, and eventually the scientist said, "We cannot do it now." Then Hamsaduta Prabhu said, "Then you create life now. You make it fly now. You just make one mosquito now in your laboratory." And then the scientist said, "We cannot do it now, but maybe we can do it in the future." And Prabhupada said, "No post-dated checks. You do it now. Don't tell us you'll do it in the future."
Not good. But answer always is I can do it. Like in 50 years' time, there'll be more disease.
Yeah, of course.
Because tomorrow another comes. Yeah, they're always better.
Yeah, of course.
The picture is very nice. It's the third course for the dying, for that in the US is from the drugs we are using for medical.
Side effects. Dangerous.
So there's killing more people than
Hospitals are dangerous places. A lot of people go in the hospital. Even I heard a figure. It was a lot big figure, so it was like I think it was something like 20,000 people. This is just in Australia. 20,000 people in Australia per year go to hospital and come out with some side effects. Be very careful, you know, seriously. You know, when they say we'll do this operation or we'll give you this medication, be very careful. Like, it's not a joke, they don't know what they're doing.
Mahaprabhu is not here, so I can make a statement. Whenever you take allopathic medicine, you'll get a side effect.
This is recorded, this thing. that was Shekhar.
Actually, a quarter of a million U.S. citizens die from medical side effects.
Yeah, it's big figures.
Quarter of a million a year. It's more than relaxing.
Yeah, it's big. Even I know one devotee, and when she was a young girl, she was about 7, they gave her the wrong medicine, and her whole life she has face hair growing. So she constantly, nearly every day, she has to like put some like plastic strips there, and you know, because mother just don't like that face hair. Not very pleasant. So every day she gets up, like part of her brushing her teeth, she has to put these plastic strips there and take the hair out. Whole life now. Because they gave her the wrong drug and so too much hormone, and then came to the box. So be very careful. Okay, so we'll finish off. The person born from King Vena's thighs was named Bahuka, and his complexion was as black as a crow's. All the limbs of his body were very short, his arms and legs were short, and his jaw were large. His nose was flat, and his eyes were reddish, and his hair was copper coloured. He was very submissive and meek, and immediately after his birth he bowed down and inquired, "Sirs, what shall I do?" The great sages replied, "Please sit down, Nishida." Thus Nishada, the father of the Nishada race, was born. After his, Nishada's birth, he immediately took charge of all the resultant actions of King Vena's sinful activities. As such, this Nishada class are always engaged in sinful activities like stealing, plundering and hunting. Consequently, they are only allowed to live in the hills and the forests. So Prabhupada's final comment in that purport is that no matter which race we come from, by the potency of Krishna consciousness, bell metal can be turned into gold. That is the prescription of Krishna consciousness. Sanatana Goswami says, no matter what our material qualification or disqualification is, by Krishna consciousness, by pure devotional service, by the mercy of a pure devotee, we can be changed from something unqualified to something pure. That is the potency of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yes.